The universe is filled with billions of galaxies, incredible planets, enormous black holes.
The universe is also filled with incredible mysteries, which leaves me with a lot of questions.
Which leaves us with a lot of questions. And we're here to answer some of them. Welcome to The Astrolic Explains.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Astrolic Explains. Hi.
Hello.
So we have very, very recently been lucky enough to actually see Sagittarius A star, the beating heart of our galaxy.
Yes, for our listener who don't know, Sagittarius A star is the supermassive black hole at the center of the Milky Way. And only recently we had the first direct image of it from the Event Horizon Telescope.
And it's spectacular. It's so beautiful.
Yes.
But how?
What do you mean how?
Like how is it so beautiful? No, I mean, if I understand correctly, you need a telescope like the size of Earth to be able to witness something.
Yeah,
like
so
that.
For everyone to give a sense of scale, actually, first let's discuss the real numbers and then get a sense of scale. Sagittarius A star is massive. It is a supermassive black hole. So it weighs over 4.1 times our sun. And the image that you can go Google, hopefully you've already seen it, is pretty much the size of the orbit of Mercury. So I think around 44 million kilometers in radius, something around that figures, but it would fit within the orbit of Mercury. But space is big. Sagittarius A star is 26.6 thousand light years from us. So seeing it, even though it's big, it's so tiny. It would be like seeing an atom at the end of your arm. It would be like seeing a donut or a bagel that's right size on the surface of the moon. Like, imagine just looking up and you can see a donut or a bagel.
Quite a description.
Well, and
I like that.
So to have something like that, so you need something big. And so what we need to have is a telescope the size of planet Earth. But it is, you cannot build, at least you cannot build, yes, a telescope the size of planet Earth. So physics helps us because there is a really cool technique that we can use to sort of put together all different radio telescopes, and they act like a single instrument. And you have telescopes in Europe, in Greenland, in the States, in Hawaii, in South America, in Antarctica, in Africa as well, all working together as a single Earth-size instrument.
Wow, like, that's amazing. But how does that work?
Well, to answer your question, we have a special guest, Dr. Anna Bonaldi, from the Square Kilometer Array. Hi, Anna, how's it going?
Hello. Hello, guys. Yeah, I'm fine. Thank you.
So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your work?
Yeah, sure. I am an astronomer. I graduated in astronomy at the University of Padova, that's in Italy, where I also got my PhD. I moved to the UK about 10 years ago, to work first at the University of Manchester and then for the SKA Observatory, whose headquarters are at Jodrell Bank near Manchester, where I am now. And my current job is to support and advise the design and the construction of the Square Kilometer Array Observatory, which will be the world's largest radio facility in the world once built. It will include two instruments now under construction in South Africa and in Australia. I really like this job. I think it really suits me because I love the quite abstract world of astronomy, but I also like that my effort kind of produced something tangible. And you can certainly say that the huge telescope is tangible.
Yes. That is, yeah, that is actually quite wonderful.
So I'd like to know, what is radio interferometry and how does it work?
Okay. So interferometry is a technique in which you combine several telescopes to work together and to produce an image much better than what they would have been able to observe individually. I often make this example of the eyes of a dragonfly, and other insects actually have the same. So these are compound eyes made of thousands of smaller eyes that are somewhat connected together. So that's the same that we sort of do. So with interferometry, the individual images that all the antennas pick up aren't simply added, but they are compared. The technical term that we use is correlated. And this means that we can exclude what is just a measurement error and what is truly in the sky, and we can build the best possible image.
Could you tell us about SKA and how it will use this technique?
Okay, so the SKA telescopes will have just 100 to 200 antennas for the first instrument, SKA MID, and over 130,000 antennas organized in 512 stations for the other one, SKA LO. So the sheer number of antennas is an important aspect of how well it's going to work. Another aspect is their position relative to each other. It is extremely important to determine the final imaging quality. The SKA will excel particularly at this. We combine a central area, which we call the core, where the antennas are closely packed, with some arms of antennas that are very far away. The compact core is what guarantees that we can see very well the things that in the sky are relatively large or diffuse, like, for example, nebulas or regions of our galaxies and stuff like that. While the long arms guarantee that we can see well small objects and or small details inside bigger objects. So you can have, for example, a nebula structure very well picked up by the core, and then inside you can have all these filaments and details that are going to be picked up by the arms.
Wow.
That is fascinating. And how is it going to work, given that it's in two countries, South Africa and Australia?
Okay, so the two instruments are, in a sense, they can work independently.
Mm-hmm.
SKA MID is going to observe in the higher frequency range, so 350 megahertz to 15 gigahertz, roughly. And SKA LO will cover a lower frequency range. So the two telescopes, in a sense, are independent. So they don't need to be scheduled together. However, they could. So if there is an observation for which it is important to have the lower frequency image and the higher frequency image to be taken simultaneously, for example, because your object is having a moment, let's say, and it is exploding and you need it right now, you can do so. So we have a dynamic scheduling program, and you can get both the instrument to point at the same region of the sky. The fact that they are both in the South Hemisphere means that there is quite an overlap of the part of the sky that they could see simultaneously if needed.
That is fascinating. That's really, really exciting.
What are you most excited about with SKA's future observations?
Okay, so SKA is an observatory, and it is an extremely versatile instrument. So it's going to be able to do a wide range of science cases. And the way that it will work, we are going to accept proposals from the science community on a variety of possible topics. And there will be a selection process to basically observe the best of them, right? Our science community is already working on their ideas, on preparing their observations, and it is a wide range. So just to cite some of them, we go from the study of the universe as a whole, which involves the mapping of large areas of the sky with thousands of galaxies to see how they're distributed, how they work, to the study of some individual galaxies, including our own, and of course, zooming in on stars and pulsars and planets, even to see whether we can find some evidence of extraterrestrial life.
Wow.
So it is, as I say, there is a wide range. You can all pick your favorite, but if I have to cite my own, the time that you switch on an instrument that is markedly superior to its predecessor, you always discover something that you didn't quite expect, something that wasn't even contemplated in any of your initial ideas and proposals. And this part, this discover the unknown, is what gets me more excited. So I think, you know, we are going to switch it on and we are going to make a discovery. Well, someone is going to make a discovery, not necessarily me, actually, but, you know, that is what is going to make me the most proud when it happens.
What is the current timeline for SKA?
So we've started construction. The construction is going to take around 8 years in total. It's going to go in phases. So rather than, you know, building the individual antennas and assembly all together in the end, which it could be a bit risky, we are going to have several deliveries of the smaller system, which we are going to all connect, like if it is a smaller version, let's say, of SKA, and do some observations actually with it, mostly to test that everything is working correct before we move to the bigger thing. But the full operations are going to be start in around 8 years, basically from now, with the full number of antennas.
You said that the first observation, we can expect them sooner than that, so?
Yes, so this we are talking what we call a sort of commissioning observations. So we are not going to go, you know, for the discover the unknown part, of course. So what we will do several things to validate the system and whether it's working the way that it is expected. So we might observe, for example, some objects that have been observed by other instruments. This is very useful. We can compare and we can see if the calibration work, etc. This could already provide some exciting images. So the SKA is, you know, the way for the SKA is being paved by a generation of precursor and pathfinder instruments, which have done this commissioning recently, and they are now turning on for the regular observation. So to cite some of them, there is, for example, MIRCAT, which is a precursor of SKA MIR in South Africa, and NWA in Australia. Some of them are in the same site, which is very good. So they really can also work in the same conditions. And some of them, even in the commissioning phase, they release quite beautiful images, as I say. So we might already see something of what the SKA will be capable of in a shorter time frame of a few years.
That is wonderful. I think that's that answer our question. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
So thank you very, very much to our special guest. That was absolutely fascinating. And I don't think I've ever heard anything quite as, I'd say borderline sci-fi, but it's here on Earth and it's real and it's happening.
I do love radio astronomy. I have not had the chance to do much in it, but I do love, I don't know if it's my experience with Contact, both watching the movie and reading the book when I was early teenager, or just the fact that there is a whole universe that we cannot see, in a way that there's so much more that out there that we can actually see. And I think it's both fascinating, there's so mysterious, but also what a testament to human ingenuity that we can come up with ways to study the universe. And
I was going to say, we're just on the threshold now. We're just peeping out of the door. We've barely set foot outside, and we're creating all these incredible instruments that are letting us see
places that I can't even comprehend their distances. Mind-blowing.
Oh, seriously, the square kilometer array really is going to revolutionize radio astronomy, which has already done a huge leap forward with so many instruments across the planet. So the future is bright, especially in radio waves.
Okay, I'll give you that one.
Thank you. Till next time.
Till next time.